Let's begin at the beginning. What were your musical origins, and how did all of that lead to a career in opera?
I started playing piano at a very young age, and my mother got me involved in musical theater. A lot of my training through my formative years was in musical theater. I also was that little kid who'd kind of write my own little songs about whatever was happening at our house and things like that. So I was always very creative musically and encouraged to be. So I went to school for my undergrad in jazz, actually, was my focus at first, in piano and in voice. And I did a lot of kind of a mixture of everything while I was in my undergrad, lots of musical theater. And also because I was a jazz major, or if your concentration was anything other than classical music, you also had to take classical voice lessons or classical piano lessons. It was a little bit of a kicking and screaming sort of thing at first. I was like, I don't need this. Ah, I don't want to do this. But I actually really enjoyed it. And my teacher, Ellen Chickering, who she just passed away this April, she was just so wonderful. And she taught me, you know, she heard my voice and helped me to discover it in a way that was safe and fun. And, you know, we would do things like, now make fun of an opera singer. And so I would make fun of an opera singer and she'd be like, now go listen to your lesson recording because that's actually legit, like possibilities of a career instrument here. And I'd be like, okay, whatever. And then I'd go back and I'd listen. I'd be like, oh shoot, she's right. So yeah, there was a lot of that going on. And I was, you know, at the University of Southern Maine is where I did my undergraduate training. It was a smaller school, but very, very serious and focused, and it allowed me a lot of safety and nurture and care to explore things. And if I screwed up, I wasn't at a big New York conservatory or something like that. There was just a lot of freedom in being there and having both the jazz community there and musical theater, opera and classical music. So yeah, I eventually ended up focusing classical music. I switched to the dark side halfway through my undergrad to solely vocal performance, but emerged with some minors in jazz and piano. I mean, originally my focus was I wanted to be a music educator, and my idea of what my life and career would look like was that I would teach ideally kinder music because I love that super young, uninhibited age range of people just in general. I was hoping I would be like kinder music, elementary music teacher by day, and then moonlight as a cabaret singer or do summer stock, musical theater stuff, you know, in the off time. But I was encouraged to go to school, to keep going to school for my master's in opera. And then that led to a bunch of different apprentice programs in different places and people pointing me at different competitions and toward different people to work with. And now here I am.
You've been playing the role of Beppe in the Atlanta Opera's production of Pagliacci. And you have a concert coming up on Tuesday entitled Mezzo Extravaganza. Since you're one of those mezzo-sopranos, tell us a little bit about the mezzo-soprano voice.
It wasn't until the turn of the century that the mezzo-soprano voice actually emerged as a proper voice type. You know, up until then, you see in Mozart scores, in even Gounod, every single role that we now consider a, quote, mezzo-soprano role, as you go down the list, they're all listed as sopranos. So one of the things that I think that my teachers really did me a great service with, and I have to give a shout out to Will Crutchfield, formerly of the Caramore, but now Teatro Nuovo is his big company that he runs. He really opened my eyes to a lot of repertoire and to thinking in that way of, you know, we're all just a dash soprano of some kind. So as you'll see, like going down some of my resume or roles that I'm scheduled to sing, who knows because of COVID, how that'll all shake down. But, you know, I'm supposed to sing Susanna in Marriage of Figaro at some point, Zerlina in Don Giovanni, and I've sung Despina in Così fan tutte, and now I'm slated to sing Dorabella, which both of those two roles are kind of in this seconda donna area. The way that I view the mezzo-soprano voice is we're chameleons, I think. Within the voice type, there are so many different types of us existing, you know, some who sit very low and we might call contraltos, and others that, you know, are so, their voices sit so high that people are asking them, are you really a mezzo? I don't know, you know, like that's Zwischenfach. Women like the great Friederike von Stade sits in that category, I think. And I think that maybe because of my early musical upbringing and training, I just view voice type a bit more fluidly. And also, I mean, I guess that brings us to Beppe. Beppe is traditionally sung by a character tenor. This was one of those things that, you know, in speaking with Tomer about, you know, opera being reimagined, like this was a cool opportunity to try something different with a role that is traditionally in a whole different Fach and voice type entirely, and to see what we came up with, you know, with my particular bag of theatrical tricks that I bring to things and musicianship. I would have to say that I'm a lot more fluid and progressive as far as my thoughts on voice type than most. But I hope that with, you know, COVID being this MacGuffin that we're all having now, that maybe more people might be a bit more open-minded to, I don't know, maybe a contralto sometimes singing Lucia di Lammermoor. You know, transpose it. Why not? It happens in musical theater all the time. And in a lot of Baroque music as well, we find that even Handel operas now done modern day. If a soprano wants a key to be a third higher, no problem. We'll just transpose it.
Turning Beppe into a trouser role is certainly an intriguing move.
I'm a creature of the theater and I enjoy the challenges and excitement and nuance of tackling different roles that are not traditionally done by a mezzo or by somebody of a different gender, even. Tomer and I had the idea of really, along with the idea of truly reimagining opera, this would be a really great opportunity to, you know, just with one of the smaller roles, see how this kind of an experiment would work. It turned out to be really fun and exciting. We turned the character into more of a, almost a, like Tobias in Sweeney Todd, sort of, you know, the kid who kind of tags along and just finds himself in this dysfunctional found family. And then this took a gamble on incorporating the melodeon sounds into it and, you know, using that as part of the character, that this little kid really loves to create music and enjoys being part of the crazy spectacle around him. And this version of Beppe was born.
Tell us about the mezzo extravaganza. Who's singing in it?
It'll be Jamie Barton, Gabrielle Battaigne, Daniela Mack, and myself. And all four of us really hit the gamut of different types of mezzo repertoire that we all travel in, and different shades of colors of voice, different sizes, different abilities, you know, where we find ourselves in different repertoire even. So it's going to be a really eclectic concert that we've actually managed to stay pretty much within public domain without going into even the modern. We're going to hit, you know, the wide range of pretty classic standard mezzo rep, and we're going to give you all a really nice variety of selections. All of these women that I get to sing with on this concert are friends, like good friends. I think that people don't realize, you know, they like to see the diva fights and, you know, that kind of a thing. You know, they like to make it out like there's a lot of drama, but this group of women, the singers and our pianist, Elena Kolodova, who is incredible. She's an entire orchestra unto herself. It's just so fun, and I'm so excited. And I can't wait to hear them and to support them and to get to sing with them. Daniela and I will sing the cat duet, the Rossini cat duet. We both travel a lot in florid repertoire, you know? So at that, I'm really looking forward to singing that. And I've actually covered her a couple times in both Rossini and Handel roles. So I think that'll just be really, really fun to actually get to sing that repertoire together for the first time. And then also, Jamie Barton and I became friends years and years ago. We check in all the time, and she's a good source of strength and helping me to keep things in perspective often. So it's really cool to have those gals. And then Gabby, she's part of the studio here. She is just like a light, just a wonderful bright light. Her voice is gorgeous, and she is just an incredible human that I've gotten to know through this process. And I'm happy to call her a friend now. And like I said, Elena is just a beast on the piano, and she's just so fun and silly and an incredible musician. So it's really going to be a really fun experience with these women. And again, an experience I think we all need, you know, just some good old-fashioned camaraderie and dueling banjos, you know, having fun.
Speaking of camaraderie, you're part of this larger Atlanta Opera Company Players, and then there's also the six singers of the Glenn Studio Players. What's been your experience with that so far, this larger ensemble of singer actors?
In terms of being part of a company, of a resident company, it's actually the first time for me that I've really had a chance to be part of essentially what is a fest situation. You know, we find this a lot in Germany, Austria, where you'll become part of an ensemble. And so you get to work with people in many different capacities over the course of a lot of time, and you really work and you get to know them and you build relationships with them. One of the really wonderful side effects of that in this situation is that, you know, because it's live theater and it definitely live theater outside, so we're not just dealing with like the magical things that can happen when, you know, when something goes a little differently in any given performance, we're also dealing with the weather changing as well. And so when you've started to develop these relationships with people and you start to get to know them, you're able to improvise on the fly in a way that you can't as easily when you're just in for one production that's going to last, you know, maybe 3 to 5 weeks. So we all have this wonderful rapport, and there's moments where we don't have to say anything at all. The other night it was very cold, so we have these blankets that we can use on stage and off. And I was using my blanket on stage, and when I got on stage, I could tell that Talise Trevine, the gal who's singing Nedda, that she was chilly. And I just, in a look, I was like, I'm going to give you this blanket. And she was like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, here you go. And, you know, and also further informs our relationship as characters, you know, and shows that, at least in this version of Pagliacci, Beppe really does care for Nedda, and they look out for one another. He's kind of a little brother type to her, but, you know, he's sort of got a little puppy dog love for her in this version. But you know, those elements, they really help to build our relationships together, not just as actors, but as characters. And it's nice because we have so many performances of this particular show together. It's always a different show every night now. And our characters slightly change, or there are moments and things that happen that you're free to play with in a different way that you might not necessarily play with if you only had two performances of a show. It really speaks to my initial training way back, you know, growing up in theater and musical theater, where it really is a live, breathing art form that, you know, you do a lot of shows and you get into this repertory pattern.
Your experiences here as part of the Atlanta Opera Company Players and this production of Pagliacci in the midst of this pandemic, how does all of that play into your thoughts about the future of opera?
There is no going back, at least for me. And I think having people say, well, when we get back to normal, I don't think that there's going back to normal. I think that what's normal is what's happening right now in the present. And the normal will be what's happening in the present, however many weeks from now, years from now. This pandemic's not going away, not anytime soon. So we've got to learn how to adjust and recalibrate and use it and not ignore that it's here. So one of the things that I have really embraced is singing in a mask or singing inside that plexiglass box. These are new realities, and this is the new normal. Let's not pretend that we're not wearing masks. Let's not pretend that in order to be safe and to also have moments of freedom where you don't have to wear a mask, that you got to be inside this box. That's great. Let's embrace it and see how we can use these elements to our advantage instead of looking at them as a hindrance, number one. Number two, I think taking us outside of the opera house is wonderful and creative, and the possibilities really are endless. It's exciting to me to see where we're going to evolve as we continue to seek out different venues and different ways of bringing our art form to audiences and sharing in that communion that we all so desperately need right now. You know, we're also isolated. We're also even more so locked inside our little future machines, looking at our phones all the time and, you know, consuming all of our preferred art forms through those devices right now. I'm excited to see just how much further people push this envelope of taking opera outside of the opera house proper. And all of that said, because of that, out of necessity, but also because we have so many wonderful creative artists around us in this situation, we've been able to create something that is not just opera, it's not just theater, it's not just musical theater, it's something else. It's this wonderful hybrid that even the elements of being outside is playing its own character and part of the show. When Delta flies one of its planes over the field, you know, sometimes there's no ignoring it. So don't ignore it. Let that be part of the experience that we're all in a baseball field under a big tent and a plane just went by at the most perfect time in the middle of somebody's aria or something, you know, to really flavor and comment on that. Actually, there was a moment in one of our final dress rehearsals where right after La Commedia e Finita was said, no joke, and everybody's lying there dead. We hear ambulance sirens going by us on the main road behind the baseball field. And it was like, everyone was like, that was perfect. You know, and you can't ignore those things. It's things happen. And it's really exciting and beautiful in their own strange way. So I really hope that this really wonderful grand experiment that we're also lucky to be a part of here helps to propel the company to continue to create in this way out of the box kind of way, but also helps to inspire and inform any other companies and organizations that are looking to do similar things or are seeing the ideas that we're, you know, putting into play here and they want to take it in another direction, you know? I mean, I've had so many wonderful conversations with different colleagues about how things are going here. And, you know, I was worried that because there are so many of our colleagues who are unable to work right now, I was worried, and I've been very sensitive to the fact that I'm one of a handful of people who's lucky enough to be doing this right now. I didn't want to post too much about it on social media, and I try to be careful about how much that I talk about the experience with people. I want to be sensitive to that because there is a lot of mourning and grieving going on for the lost work and lost life. And it's a really emotional, just big, wide open time. But in all of these conversations and talking about all of this and the things that I will share, I've gotten nothing but people being inspired and excited and lots of messages that speak to the idea of like, thank you that you guys are doing this. Like, I need to see this. I need to know that there is some lifeboat out there, you know, that this lifeboat is going somewhere. We don't know where it's going to land, but it will wash up on a shore at some point. And it's going to be exciting to see what shore exactly we wash up on, and you know, all the tools and different people that we can bring along, and you know, we can send up some smoke signals and be like, here we are, like, welcome, you know, come to our island. I feel a bit like I won a lottery. It could be anybody who got to have this opportunity. So I'm taking it very seriously, as are all of my colleagues. It's hard to not feel big emotions when thinking about it, when you take a big step back. We're so lucky to have this opportunity during this time and the people that's been assembled here, not just singers, I mean, everybody on the production team, everybody on the staff, whether they are here physically or they're working remotely from California. It's really incredible to see how much everybody believes in what we're doing and how much everybody is supporting one another and is able to set aside, whatever stresses are going on during the day outside of our projects and just come together and almost find peace in the fact that now we're going to work on creating this project together. It's been a really beautiful, beautiful thing, and it's come together pretty organically at times, which is, which was sort of a shock, to be completely honest. Looking at all of the different obstacles that one would have, would think we'd have at, looking at it at first glance, to really just marvel at the fact that so much of it has come together organically, and that if something that we thought was a great way of doing something doesn't work out, to see how quickly the team pivots and is like, oh yeah, cool, let's just roll with it this way. And I think that that also speaks to Tomer's ability to seek out not just great artists and creators and those who support that, but also just good human beings.
In addition to the upcoming Mezzo Extravaganza, there are two other concerts that have been programmed alongside the productions of Pagliacci and the Kaiser of Atlantis. The first of those concerts has already been performed, the music of Kurt Weill, but there is another one, Crossroads, coming up on the afternoon of Sunday, November 15th, before the final performance of Pagliacci that evening. Tell us about those two concerts, if you would.
The Kurt Weill concert was in conjunction with the Kurt Weill Foundation. We also happen to have three former La Dileña competition prize winners that are part of the ensemble: Jasmine Habersham and Brian Vu and myself. The La Dileña competition is part of the Kurt Weill Foundation under their umbrella. One of the wonderful things about that organization is that once you're like in the family, they check in. If you have repertoire ideas or pieces that are difficult to find, just drop them an email and they're like, oh yeah, sure, here you go. And here's a bunch of reference material about it. They're such a supportive, wonderful organization. So it was really nice for the three of us to kind of have that time to connect, because we all did the competition at different times. So to connect and get to know each other through that music that we all love, but also to reconnect with the foundation and to help our colleagues to program a concert that they felt good about, and to find different selections of pieces that maybe they were kind of toying with or they hadn't heard of before, and to really encourage them to just lean into it and have a good time. And it ended up being a really wonderful night, and the audience was totally there with us and very supportive, and a really sweet couple in the front row that they were singing along. It was everything that I could do to not just like smile aggressively and want to join in with them. That was a wonderful experience, and I really hope that we can maybe look into doing another night that's similar. Maybe that's for the spring. Crossroads is the brainchild really of my husband, Mike Mays, because when the pandemic hit, we were no longer singing opera, as our job in an opera house. There was definitely a few weeks where our home was pretty silent, just trying to process what had happened. But eventually, I just sat down at the piano and started playing jazz and American standards and anything that I could get my hands on. And he wasn't quite there yet. Took him about a week to join me. I just started putting his guitar in his hand and was like, here, play. Because he grew up in a, country bluegrass tradition of music. And, I ended up learning a lot about that music. I mean, I always sang along with him a little bit here and there. But again, it was always a here and there thing, because our focus was so laser pointed at opera and the next couple roles that we were staring down the barrel at, that we had to continue to keep working on and get memorized and be ready. And so it oftentimes doesn't leave enough time to play the kind of music that sometimes your soul just needs to decompress, or that you grew up with and that really speaks to you. So most of us don't grow up wanting to be Pavarotti. We grow up wanting to be, well, in my case, it was Joni Mitchell or Ella Fitzgerald, Patti LuPone. Those were my first musical influences. there's a lot of opera singers that are out there that have that same kind of those musical influences that brought them to music to begin with. And then, through exploration, we found opera. And I guess going back to what I said at the beginning about my training, there was, like I said, that element of kicking and screaming of, oh gosh, if I am to sound like an opera singer, that would be the most horrible thing ever. Oh no. And as I started to learn and to really listen, and my ear became attuned to not just all of the other music that I had grown up listening to and become exposed to. Mind you, jazz also was an acquired taste for me as well as I started to mature and just get a few more years in my life. Opera and classical music became really part of that as well. The Crossroads concert is hearkening back to all of our early influences that are not necessarily operatic. So there's going to be some standard bluegrass, some R&B, just some real classic American songs. I'm pretty certain that we'll hear Jamie Barton, who's a Georgia native and now lives and makes her home in Atlanta, sing "Georgia on My Mind." We're just pulling these songs from these places that really speak to us and have helped to form our musical beings, but also that we go back to time and time again, that bring us comfort and joy. And what a better time. I can't think of a better time that we all need as much comfort and joy as we possibly can share and be part of. I'm really looking forward to this one. It's going to be cool. And, again, as opera singers, we don't always get to choose the repertoire that we sing. Oftentimes it's what's happening in a season that's been programmed. And am I right? Do I fit into this cast? And your agent comes to you with possibilities and things that have been offered. So a lot of the control of deciding what repertoire you get to offer and who you get to offer it with is out of our hands. Again, one of the wonderful byproducts of being part of an ensemble and getting to know people and getting to know their strengths and how they like to collaborate, this Crossroads concert is going to be a really wonderful byproduct of that.
I've been speaking today with mezzo-soprano Megan Marino. Thank you, Megan, for being with us today. And thank you to all of our readers and listeners for tuning in. I'm Mark Gresham for Irrelevant.